taken our Bibles and turned over to the book of Luke. Okay, so apparently the pre-teens, now's your chance to go to your class. I think they were waiting until after the communion. So if there are any pre-teens in the room, you can go ahead and make your way to your classes. I'm sorry you get to miss out on a wonderful message. Yes, they had a chance to go around the British Museum. Douglas Jacoby, who's in town for the Bible study tour that's taking place this weekend, he asked me to be one of the guides to show people around some of the exhibits at the British Museum, and I hadn't done that for many, many years. In fact, actually, I think the last time I did a guided tour around the British Museum was back in, I think it was 1995 or 1996. So I was a little bit rusty, to say the least. And there are these other, Douglas was one of the tour guides. We had David and Amanda Kaner, they were there as well. James Gregg, Alex Satsagenian. They were leading some of these groups. And then there was myself. For the people who were in my group, there were eight of them, I felt like they were a little bit short-changed. Because I was wandering around, and there's so many amazing things in the British Museum. But one thing I forgot was they tend to move the exhibits around a bit. And so there were things, just they weren't where I remember them to be. I'd already done a little bit of reconnaissance beforehand, but then you forget, and I'd spotted where different things were, and at one point, I think I led them round in a circle, and they were like, haven't we been here before? Oh yes, this is just so you can get a second look at some of these wonderful exhibits. But in fact, today I really wanted to actually just to share some of those things with you, but really didn't have time to do that. But if you've not been to the British Museum, there are so many incredible artifacts. You know, there's so much corroboration from archaeology of the Bible, and there's this big black stone called the Black Obelisk or the Black Stela from Assyria. And in it, on it, you've got these chiseled pictures, and one of them, it actually says, is Jehu, who's mentioned in 2 Kings, and he's paying tribute to the King Shalmaneser III of Assyria, and you see a picture of him kneeling down and offering tribute, and the Bible tells us that he paid, I think it's like 30 talents of gold or something, to this king. But then there's another one called the Stela of Shalmaneser III, where you see it's a commemorative slab, and on it it's got records of his dealings with some of the Israelite kings. It mentions Ahab the Israelite, for example. It mentions Ben-Hadad of Syria, who's also mentioned in the scriptures. And it's fantastic just to see outside corroboration of the scriptures. And there's many other things as well. There's the annals of Sennacherib. There's the Nabonidus cylinder. There's the Cyrus cylinder. There's so many things. The Nabonidus cylinder is interesting because up until the mid-1800s, there's a King Belshazzar mentioned in Daniel chapter 5, and everyone thought that the last king of Babylon was Nabonidus, and so they thought, because there was no outside record, extra-biblical mention of this king, they thought it was just some fictional character made up by the biblical writers. Until, of course, then they discovered this cylinder along with the chronicles that went along with it, where Nabonidus actually, he's written a prayer, and in his prayer, he's praying, it says here, he's praying for Belshazzar, the firstborn, the offspring of my heart. And of course, in Daniel chapter 5, you see Belshazzar, he's honoring Daniel, and he makes him the third highest ruler in all of Babylon. And of course, the third highest ruler was because Belshazzar was actually co-regent. He was king along with his father. His father wasn't in Babylon at the time. That's made clear in the chronicles that are found along with this cylinder. And he'd left his son behind to rule with some of his other officials. And so that's why Daniel was raised to the third highest, because of course he couldn't be second, because his father was already the first, and so he was second. But it's amazing. You read all this stuff, and you see all these archaeological finds, and you think, this is incredible. And then you've got things like the steward's inscription, where it talks about Shebna or Shebaniah. And then you've got the Polytarch's inscription, and then you've got the Lachish letters, and then you've got the ivories of Samaria, and it goes on and on. And if you've not had a chance to go to the British Museum, let me encourage you, take an opportunity to go, bring your friends with you, take along a tour guide who knows a lot about stuff, like Hugo, and he can show you around, and it'll be fascinating for you. But anyway, that's got nothing to do with the sermon today. In Luke chapter 9, we're going to talk about denying ourselves. I had to laugh as Andy was sharing earlier about winning prizes, and then he kept referring to the prize that Margareta won, a modelling career, when actually what she said was modelling clay was what she said she won. But Andy kept referring to it as modelling career, and I was trying to signal him, but he just wasn't getting it. But in Luke chapter 9, Jesus says in verse 23, a passage which we're all very familiar with, then he said to them all, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very self? Now, this is a passage which we're very familiar with. In fact, actually, this passage here in one form or another appears in all four Gospels. This whole idea of we've got to be willing to let go of our life if we want to save it. And Jesus says, if you want to come after me, if you want to follow me, you must deny yourself. Well, what exactly does that mean, to deny yourself? You know, in the Old Testament, whenever they talked about denying yourself, it was it meant the concept of humbling yourself, or abasing yourself, or in some senses it meant fasting. And you can look at some references in Leviticus and Numbers where he talks about remembering the sacred assemblies and denying yourself and doing no work and being there. And this whole idea of fasting putting yourself down before God and recognizing your proper position. And of course, you know, in Philippians 2 it talks about Jesus who humbled himself even to the point of death on the cross. And see, that's the context in which he's talking right here. This whole idea of he is going to the cross. In fact, if you read the few verses beforehand, he just asked his disciples the question in verse 18, who do the crowds say I am? And they gave a number of answers, Elijah, John the Baptist, one of the other prophets, Jeremiah, someone. And the question he asked, who do people say I am, was just a prelude to the real question, who do you say I am? And of course, Peter answers up, he says that you are the Christ of God, and he gets it right. Way to go, Peter. He often opens his mouth quickly and sometimes puts his foot in it, but this time he got it right. And he says, you are the Christ, you are the Messiah, the Son of God. And it says, from that point onwards, in verse 22, then Jesus began to explain that he had to suffer, he had to be rejected by the elders, by the chief priests, the teachers of the law, he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. And it's in this context that he says, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily. You know, the cross was a very clear symbol of suffering and execution. And this is what Jesus says, you want to come after me, you've got to take up your cross. Now, if you're trying to attract followers, and you're trying to get people to follow you, then saying, okay, if you want to follow me, you've got to be willing to die. If you want to follow me, you've got to be willing to suffer. If you want to follow me, you've got to be willing to humble yourself and every single day walk the long green mile, walk to your death. That's not exactly the way to go about winning friends, is it? You know, a number of years ago, haven't you ever seen those Betty Crocker cake mixes? You ever seen those? We have a few of those packets, and my kids used to enjoy making them when they were young. Now, of course, they've got to the stage where they don't need those anymore. But you know, when they first came out, they were really simple. All you had to do was just add water, put it in the oven, and you'd get your perfect cake. But they did terribly. No one bought them because it was too easy. People felt like they wanted to be engaged in the cake-making process. They didn't want to go the whole hog of doing it all themselves, but they didn't want to do it just add water and that's that. And so the people didn't buy it. So then they revised it so that you had to add an egg and then add water. And then all of a sudden it became a best-selling product. And there's something about people wanting to be engaged. And you know, when it comes to following Jesus, he doesn't make it easy. Because it's not easy. And when you hear about just become a Christian, it's really easy. Actually, that's not true. Because if you're looking for the easy Christianity method, it doesn't exist. Or at least you might hear about it, but it's not the general article. Let's look at some of these other passages in Mark chapter 8. In Mark 8. We pick up here in verse 31. Actually, yeah. This is again, in verse 27, Jesus just asked them the same question, who do people say I am? And they gave their answers, and then he asked, who do you say I am? And Peter says, you are the Christ. And then in verse 31, he then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, teachers of the law, that he must be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Now you've got to love Peter. One minute he's getting the question right in verse 29. Yes, you're the Christ, and Jesus says that's right, and Peter's feeling good about himself. Then the next minute, Jesus is explaining about his death, and Peter says, "Jesus, come with me for a second." Jesus, what are you talking about? Stop it! Stop it now! Stop all this death nonsense! And he's rebuking Jesus. He just 3 verses earlier, he's just said that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And now, he's forgotten that answer, and now he's rebuking him. Clearly there was a bit of a disconnect, but now he's like, what are you talking about, going to your death? And in verse 33 it says, when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." You know, this context makes it clear that Jesus is looking at the disciples. He's not even looking at Peter. He's turned his back on Peter, and he says, "Get behind me, Satan." What was the issue? Well, see, here's Peter, and he's understand, wow, we're following the Messiah, we're following the Christ, we're following the Son of the living God, and now all of a sudden he's talking about going to his death? That was unexpected. That's not what we want to hear. And so he's challenging Jesus, you can't talk about that. What are you doing? You know, we can be the same way, can't we? We say Jesus is Lord when we get baptized. In fact, that's what baptism is. It's actually putting ourselves to death. It's actually literally following Jesus' command to take up our cross and to follow him. That we willingly die to self. And Romans 6 talks about it as a death, as a burial. And so we say Jesus is Lord on the day of our baptism. But then, give it a little while, give it a few verses in Peter's case, or for us a few months or a few years, and now Jesus is no longer Lord. Now Jesus is no longer on the throne in our lives. And how do we know that? Because of the way we're living. Because at the time when we become Christians, we said no to sin, we said no to the temptations that were plaguing our lives, we said no to putting ourselves first and following our own priorities, and we said yes to Jesus. We said, you are going to be Lord, you are going to be on the throne, I will follow you, and I will be your servant. And now, after a little while, it's like, I want to take control of my life again. I want to do my own thing. I don't want to necessarily be told what to do and where to go, and I want to be in control. And that's Peter's problem. Jesus was the Christ, now he's no longer the Christ. Now he's someone who needs to be corrected. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. Look in Matthew chapter 16. In Matthew 16. Again, Jesus just asked the question, who do people say I am, in verse 15, in verse 13. And then he asks, who do you say I am? And again, Peter gets it right in verse 16, and Jesus praises him. And in verse 21, from that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, teachers of the law, that he must be killed, and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he said, this shall never happen to you. And by implication, if we're your followers, it shouldn't happen to us either. And Jesus says, you need to get behind me. And in verse 24, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself. He must take up his cross. He must follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses life for me will find it. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world, yet forfeits his soul? You know, we may think at the time that avoiding just the challenges of discipleship, avoiding the cost of commitment, we may think at the time that we're getting a good deal, that we're holding on to our own time. We're able to focus on the things that we want to focus on. We don't need to give our contribution because we can spend it on what we choose to spend it on. We don't need to fast and go on this, what was it called, the hunger something that Andy talked about? The hunger challenge? What a way to phrase it. Instead of let's just fast to raise money, let's go on a hunger challenge. You know, we don't need to do those things. Why? Because then we can just fulfill our own desires. We don't need to, you know, last week we talked about the Good Samaritan. And we talked about, you know, when we see people in need, are we willing to step up? It's funny because 3 days before I preached that sermon, myself and Mike and Neil were sitting in the Burger King in Stratford. And we were getting some time together. And then there was a guy who'd come up, who was being brought out of the men's bathroom, who'd collapsed. It's funny, I was already preparing about the sermon last week about the Good Samaritan, and you know, you see someone in need, and what do you do? And so he's sitting there, and the guy has collapsed, and people around him, and I was thinking, should I go over and see if he's okay? And I was thinking, but he's got all these excuses came to my mind. There's all these people around there, he probably needs his space, he's probably okay, he doesn't need anything. If I get up, and all these people watching, and what am I going to do? And so while I was sitting there thinking, should I, shouldn't I, Michael Neal got up, walked over, and said, there's anything I can do to help. Oh, rats. I thought, now if I get up, he'll just think I was copying him. That's not good. But you know, as disciples, there's got to be that willingness to not make excuses. There's got to be that willingness to put others ahead of ourselves, even if it's uncomfortable. There has to be that desire that Jesus really is Lord of our lives. And that it's a daily thing. Jesus says that you must take up your cross daily. Why? Because every single day within all of us, there's that desire to want to take control of our lives again. Every single day we've got to recommit ourselves to putting God first, to studying the Bible and praying. You know, I came into church this morning, as I walked past the car, there was Peju in her car reading her Bible. In the car park for everyone to see as they walked into church. So I knocked on the window, I said, Peju, are you pretending to read your Bible? But we have to do that though, not pretend to read our Bible. We have to, on a daily basis, commit to having our quiet times. Every single day. Why? Because there's going to be so many other things that crowd us out. There's going to be so many other things that vie for our time. And unless we're committed on a daily basis to renewing Jesus as Lord in our lives, we will give in. We will eventually become on the throne again. The reason Mike and I were meeting was because we were talking about how we can help each other. You know, one of the things I'm just trying to do is I'm trying to get back into shape again, as I do every year, trying to get back into shape. And, you know, for the last few months, because of various things going on in our lives, I've not been able to go to the gym, I've not been able to do any exercise, I've not been able I've just not done a lot of things I should have been doing. And I was asking Mike, I said, Mike, you're good at this, can you help me out here? And he was asking me to help him in terms of just deepening his connections with Christians within the church. And so we said, okay, let's hold each other accountable. And he said, okay, you come and you work out at my house every Saturday morning. And he said, and I'll make sure I'm in daily contact with the Christians every day. And you can ask me about it and I can ask you about it. And I said, that's great. And he says, no. He says, there has to be some kind of forfeit. Because otherwise, if there's no forfeit, then it'd be easy just to not let it happen. I wasn't too sure about this. But he said, okay, so, he said, and if you don't come to work out on Saturday morning, then on Sunday, you need to get up and sing a song during your sermon. So anyway, I didn't show up yesterday, and so... But I got permission from Mike beforehand to switch our day, because I was doing this Bible study tour, so I couldn't go, and so... And so I wanted to spare all of you. So anyway, trust me, you don't want me to sing. But you know, it's funny, having people in our lives to help us to maintain our walk with God, we need those relationships. Because without them, it's so easy for us just to let slip our convictions. We know it's right. We know Jesus needs to be Lord. And we made that...